I need to start off with an apology. I have a number of slides. I might miss some of them because I was going to practice last night and this party broke out in San Francisco. And it's just all the noise and hoopla, and I just happen to be a Giants fan anyways. It was a lot of fun. And APHA was very smart, and I thought initially by just having it around Halloween. Halloween in San Francisco is usually a joyous occasion. And actually, my staff wanted me to wear my wizard's costume, but I decided against that. But let's talk a little bit about what we've... In 2004, Daryl Steinberg and a number of others brought together a legislative initiative called Proposition 63, the Mental Health Service Act. This voter initiative was one of the first in the country to essentially say those that can afford can actually contribute more to public good in our communities. And he targeted specifically mental health in the state of California. Since that time, about $1 billion a year has gone to mental health services in the state of California. It continues to do that. And part of this project that we're going to talk about today is $160 million set aside to do statewide prevention on the improving student mental health, preventing suicides, and reducing stigma and discrimination. The overarching goal that we've been approached is to create a comprehensive campaign in California that can look at things from a very broad and deep perspective. So we've looked at social media, we've looked at community organization, we looked at training, we looked at policies, and we created a plan, and I'll talk a little bit about how we got there, but essentially trying to take a campaign that I know when I talked to our RAND colleagues at the beginning of their bringing them on board, they said, well, what's your vision with this? I said, well, I was involved in the smoking cessation campaigns back in the 80s, and we've had like a 20 to 40, 50% reduction in California in smoking. And they said, well, you're not going to get that overnight with any campaign. It's going to take a while. And as a matter of fact, it was like 1 or 2% a year for 20 or 25 years, and you get that kind of reduction. If we can do that with stigma and discrimination, if we can do that with suicides, and we can improve student mental health and improve our numbers over the next 20 years, we think we'll have accomplished quite a bit. And that's our goal. In order to get here, we initially had a three-pronged statewide stakeholder process. We had hundreds of stakeholders throughout the state of California put together three plans for preventing suicide, improving student mental health, and reducing stigma and discrimination. They created three booklets, essentially, that had a series of recommendations. It was then incumbent upon CalMESA, which is the California Mental Health Service Authority, to take those three booklets and put them into an implementation plan. And we did that about 2 years ago and worked. The idea with CalMESA, it's a joint powers authority in the state of California. Two government entities can join together and create a joint powers authority. They have all of the obligations and responsibilities and transparency of a government city council, county government, state government, and we have now 51 counties in the state of California, and we expect to have 55 by the end of this month, and representing about 98% of the population. What we did then was to go through an RFP process and select essentially 25 different contractors and providers to do our suicide prevention, stigma, and improving student mental health. The funds, initially it was about $129 million. We then came back and now are sending out another $14 million to augment those programs to see where the gaps in activities, essentially looking to strengthen our racial, ethnic, and cultural competency within the existing projects. We have some very significant strategic partners, the California Department of Healthcare Services, the California Mental Health Services Oversight and Accountability Commission, which was created when the Mental Health Service Act was created to oversee and be accountable for the billions of dollars that were going to be spent. Then the California Mental Health Directors Association is a policy and advocacy group, and we work closely with them. And then a sister organization, the California Institute of Mental Health, which provides technical assistance, training, and capacity building, and puts on not quite as elaborate as this conference, but other conferences. So let me get into a little bit more deeply about what the suicide prevention activities are. We have created a project statewide with our which aims to establish a network of suicide hotlines working together toward common goals and convene best practice working groups. That's our Suicide Prevention Network program. We have a regional and local suicide capacity building. We have a number of suicide lines within the state, but they're not all nationally certified. We wanted to get them all up to speed. And then also we found from some research out of Australia that under 30-year-old use electronic media to talk not instead of the telephones, so tweets and texts and all that kind of stuff. We've gotten them up to speed so that they can be responsive to the younger population. And then, of course, a social marketing suicide prevention campaign. I don't know whether any of those who are not in California remember in the tobacco cessation, the tracheotomy lady, where they had a woman that had a tracheotomy due to her smoking, and those advertisements were very powerful in giving a message out to the public. We wanted to get similar messages, and I'll show you some of that later from our social marketers that we hired. And then suicide prevention training and workforce enhancement. Well, here we had an opportunity. We had some other data that showed that 40% of the men over the age of 65 that had seen their primary care doctor in the last 30 days, those were suicide victims. And so we wanted to intervene with the primary care physicians, and we set up some training and workforce funding to do that. The Student Mental Health Initiative, you know, you have K through 12 and your universities, and what we decided to do there was to work with our superintendents districts throughout the state. So all 11 regions have projects. I know in our local community, positive behavioral intervention services are being augmented. We had started some of those, and this is funding that's helping do that in the region, which is called the Central Coast. The California Department of Education has a role in this so that they can oversee some of the activities that are going on and assure that there's leveraging. A lot of school districts and superintendents are already very heavily involved in anti-bullying activities, suicide prevention activities. We can leverage our resources with them, and this has been very helpful, and they've come to task. I know when we did train some of the superintendents in our area about positive behavioral intervention, we could train. We had enough money to train six districts. They said, "Well, we want to do it," so we now are training 16 districts. So they used their own resources to do what we had started to work with them. The community colleges are also involved with their chancellor's office. California State University is involved in the regions of the University of California. Three separate different contracts. They work together so that they also are using some of their best practices. One of the presentations we heard recently was about how the faculties are giving a red book. It's a little red folder, and that red folder has in it how to recognize signs and symptoms of persons that might be having some problems in their school daily activities that need to be addressed, and here's some ways of dealing with that so that the teachers have something in their hand, the faculty have something in their hand that they can use. The Stigma and Discrimination Reduction Campaign, and I want to point you to a session 3:30 on Tuesday afternoon. Stephanie Welch, one of my colleagues, is here, and she's going to be doing a lot more deeper discussion of stigma and discrimination during that presentation. We had four essential approaches there. I'll just briefly go over those. Strategies for a supportive environment aims to create environments that foster positive behavioral change and social norms regarding mental health with family members and community at large. The Values, Practices, and Policy Program includes a social marketing component to disseminate stigma and discrimination reduction messages to a variety of audiences. The Promising Practices Program intends to identify existing stigma and discrimination programs and community-led programs that are successful and facilitate the dissemination of such practices. And the one that I like not the most, but I like it because I'm a policy person. The Advancing Policy to Eliminate Discrimination Program. I'll go back to my smoking cessation stuff. Stan Glantz, who's with UCSF, always talked about think globally, act locally, that if you change a policy locally, you can't necessarily do it in Washington. You can't get the tobacco lobby moved in Washington, but you can do it at your city council, and you can do it at locally. And so we've contracted with the California Disability Rights to take a look at some of the laws and practices in the state of California that discriminate against the mentally ill. I mean, an example for me is not the state of California, but the problem that service folks have about the recognition and acknowledgement of mental health problems in the service. It essentially stops their promotional opportunities, and that's not what should be happening. Instead, they should be having an opportunity to seek out help and then be able to advance. And, part of the campaign, and again, Stephanie will probably, I think the campaign is that we all have problems. I mean, you know, you shouldn't just think that just people that have serious mental illness. So that's the stigma discrimination. We have a number of things that we've talked about as far as the self-perceptions and the consequences of stigma discrimination and how that impacts employment, housing, and as I just mentioned, for instance, the military. When we hired Rand, that was the other thing that we did was said we're gonna look to get this evaluated. We want to make sure that we have a top-notch evaluation. So we sent out an RFP. We had about 10 applicants. Most of the universities in the state of California either banded together or applied separately. And then we had several folks from the East Coast, Beltway Bandits, I guess is what I call them, but and then the RAND Corporation. And after a deliberation, the RAND Corporation stood far above the others in looking at our project and try to organize it in a way from a research and evaluation perspective that we could actually get results. And so when they took a look at all of the projects we had, they started to categorize. And I'm a sociologist by heart, and being able to categorize things so that they could see where across the 25 different contracts that we have, the 5,400 deliverables, there are things like policy protocols and best practices that they could categorize and start to evaluate how folks are doing with that. That networking and collaboration was another category of activities, and we could then measure that across the different projects, but also collectively. Informational resource targeting community and student audience, seeing how that's working and what ways we're able to identify that. Of course, as I mentioned earlier, the training and education, we really think that if we can train first responders and primary care physicians and others that see or can recognize that we can have an impact on preventing suicides and reducing stigma. And then the media campaigns, which is really exciting as far as the opportunity. And I think there's one of our contractors, AdEase, also has a presentation here at some part in the conference, and Yana is here from AdEase. The theory of social change is a multi-level, institutional, individual, social change. It how certain things can then affect others at certain levels of policy, at individual level, and then it cycles around. And again, this is going back to Dr. Glantz, the whole idea that you incrementally can change not only policies but individual behavior and institutional behavior, you can really have a dramatic impact on public health. The evaluating stigma, looking at collaborations, we're doing both a horizontal and a vertical evaluations so that we're having some of our contractors do some pilot projects that we can then measure some effect, and the RAND Corporation will do that. And also creating some analytics, and one of the things that our suicide prevention folks have been talking about is creating a metric and analytics so that they can have a common metric that can be measured after the funding goes away, so that 5 years, 10 years, they can say this is what it was at baseline and this is what it is, and it's not a financially burdensome cost to do that. The so part of RAND's job was to establish baseline and community indicators, promote continuous quality improvement, identify innovative programs for replication, and coordinate and leverage across initiatives. Work with program partners on their own evaluation, as I just mentioned. It's the individual evaluators in some of the programs really appreciate the consultation and the communication they have with RAND. It's a world-class organization, and we've appreciated and learned quite a bit already just from working with them and how they've approached this. So how's it going? Well, in less than a year, we got 25 contracts with 5,400 deliverables with the intent of not only developing statewide policies and practices, but also linking to the already local efforts funded through Prop 63. As I mentioned, RAND has identified some common metrics, and evaluation efforts have already established some baseline data, and I'm going to show you some of what we've learned from some of our baseline data. One of the projects that we're having, and this, again, probably you'll see greater detail of this in one of the other sessions, is the Know the Signs campaign that the AdEast folks are going to be doing for us on suicide prevention. And it's really a robust, and you could spend an hour describing it, and hopefully there'll be some time for them to do that. But there's a website, and it really is trying to get the message out so that people can know the signs of suicide and that they can intervene on an individual community and family basis. Starting off in looking at it, they did some surveying across the state, and the goal is to identify individual needs and circumstances for each county in the state of California. They looked at a couple of different populations that showed that with some, those who know where they could seek help for a friend or family member were 7 to 8 times more likely to agree that they felt confident. And that was one of the factors, was the confidence that a person felt in being able to help somebody, and how if they didn't feel confident, then they weren't going to seek to try to help them. Those reporting knowledge of at least one warning sign were significantly more likely to agree that they felt confident that they could discuss suicide with someone they care about. We've also found that in some of the surveys that certain populations were less able to talk about suicide in their family, that they needed some assistance with that. And so part of the efforts are going to be to target those populations. And those with personal experience of suicide express more family and community support. So this is some of the demographics for this, or the graphics as far as where we found the populations to either have confidence or have belief or have concern about their efficacy in dealing with it. Also, they did a survey for us on children 11 to 13 and then adult decision makers. The purpose was to assess knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors related to the issues of stigma and discrimination. So who are the adult decision makers? 55% of Californians age 25 or higher met our criteria for inclusion. Almost two-thirds have experienced close contact with a person experiencing a mental health problem. 10% reported that they themselves have had a mental illness or have one now. Less than a majority of the people believe that except for their illness, persons with mental illness are just like everyone else. In a more positive vein, a majority believe that people with mental illness can make a contribution and that anyone can experience a mental illness. So we got some attitudes and beliefs that the marketing people could then take out and start to work with. The middle school youth survey, they surveyed nearly 650 youth age 11 to 13 who were interviewed in malls throughout California. Overall knowledge about mental illness was lower than expected. 80% surveyed believe that people with mental illness are more likely to act in ways you don't expect. Two-thirds surveyed believe violent behavior is a form of serious mental illness. 58% survey believe people with mental illness are required to take medication and get counseling. I got my 2-minute sign, and I did it just at the right time. We're very proud of this project. It's a very broad and comprehensive. We think it's going to have a dramatic impact in the state of California, and we think it's going to link to others We heard about the Center for Disease Control's mental health promotion and mental illness prevention. We've been working with them on trying to link some of our activities with that. And if you need to contact us further on our website, somebody mentioned one of the things that Rand did for us was a literature review on suicide, a literature review on stigma, a literature review on student mental health. It's on our website, and it's an excellent 25-30-page review of the practices worldwide and the literature and the research on that. So I would encourage you to take a look at our website. You can get to it with www.calmesa.org, and I appreciate having the opportunity to not wear my costume today. So.